One Sunday morning he said that he had just returned from parole and that the Pyrrhalian magnetic fields were completely charted and safe for navigation. Weora continued, "Now that the satellite is opened, another link has been created with a planet beyond our confederation. This will bring prosperity to Pyrrhol, which will become well known to the other planets in our group. The astral craft will boost their development, enrich their sciences and technologies and enhance their skills. Their system will grow. The ships will help to bring them the benefits shared by the Confederation, a wealth not necessarily in material gain, but of a deeper spiritual quality and joy of living. How I wish Earth would also join us in this relationship. We would share with you too. You would never regret taking such a step. Conditions on Earth would change. There would be no more wars and poverty. Your planet would learn to live in peace and we all could come and go freely as we now do on Pyrrhol. Your Earth rulers need a change of heart and mind." Mankdun ended with the words, "Voldar and myself are glad to have been given the honor of the magnetic sweep patrol of the Pyrrhalian system. We are glad to be associated with the wonderful people who inhabit that planet. Do the inhabitants of Earth really differ in their behavior patterns from other human beings that populate the planets of the Confederation?" Weora once said that an experimental colony of Earthmen had been tried in the Confederation but that it was a failure. This was in 1945 when the Confederation made another attempt at establishing a new bond of understanding and communication and made radio transmissions such as these to many Q bases on our planet. Apparently the inhabitants of the Confederation resemble us closely enough to understand us, but we are on a very different rung of the evolutionary ladder and cannot live together. The planet in the Confederation which was involved in this experimental Earth colony was a twin of our Venus. In the past, extraterrestrials have spoken of a planet Venus. There is confusion about this as there are apparently two planets referred to as being Venus. One is in Earth's solar system, and the other is in a replica of our solar system in the other universe. Sol's Venus has no physical human life on it, whereas the other supports a large civilization and is referred to as Vango Salamia, the green planet, which is said to be larger than Earth. The volume of our Venus is 0.88 that of Earth and is therefore smaller. Salamia also has a perpetual cloud formation obscuring the surface, so there are some similarities. The history of Mars appears to be just the reverse. According to the Cold Asians, our Mars, in the past, had a technologically advanced civilization which destroyed itself in a nuclear holocaust that left it a lifeless hulk. The remnant of the Martian race, according to them, is now on Ceton, a planet of the Confederation, in the other universe. The 1945 experimental colony of people from Earth, who were all volunteers from a town in Switzerland, were settled in the Confederation. But after 1 year, the majority of these people had to be returned to their home area. This was a bitter disappointment to the Confederation, who had expected tremendous results from the first large-scale evacuation from Earth. Apparently the Swiss could not adapt themselves to the Confederation style of life on Salamia. Not that they could not get along with the Salamian people, but the living conditions were too different. A few Swiss preferred to remain and they are now thriving and have a small village there where they still carry on some of their Swiss traditions and home language. Weora commented, "As a result of the Swiss failure and other disappointments, Salamia has withdrawn all her bases from Earth. What a pity. All the time that went into those bases, but Salamia now feels that it is no longer worthwhile. I personally do not feel that way. During my term of office, even if it means that I may have to come back to Earth, these bases should continue for the Confederation. I ask you, my friends, to strengthen your Q groups. I do not feel that all is lost, so bear with me and help me with this task. Coldus does not feel like Salamia. We still see a need for the bases on your planet. Possibly Vango Salamia resembles our planet Venus only in the position it occupies in that other mirror universe and having cloud formations which continually obscure the surface. A long time ago in its history, large areas of jungle, shrub and forest were dug and plowed into the soil and these areas became fertile. It is now truly the green planet Salamia, as the cold Asians refer to it, and it supplies much of the vegetable produce of the Confederation. The surface has wide plains, where many of its cities are located, but there are also mountainous regions, which are sparsely populated. It is known for the beauty of its cities. The buildings are tall and round and known throughout the Confederation for their majesty and aesthetics. They are connected by enclosed causeways with continuous moving surfaces which convey people from building to building. These structures, with interconnecting causeways, are now found on all the planets of the Confederation, for the Salamians have traveled far, designing and constructing these beautiful buildings. The capital city is Silin, divine knowledge, and was given this name because on its outskirts there is an area of 38.4 square kilometers where thousands of physicians and scientists practice the arts of healing. This is another gift with which the Salamians appear to be endowed and for which they are consequently much sought after throughout the Confederation. They excel in surgery as well as in drugless therapies, and all branches of the healing arts are practiced in Silin. It is also worth recording that the planet has many mines, which yield a mineral from which metal is extracted for the construction of astral craft. These metals, mined on Salamia, are taken by cargo carrier to Seton and Calders, where the astral craft are mainly manufactured. The average Salamian, man or woman, is 1.8 meters tall, with dark to light golden hair, blue eyes and fair complexion. The women are remarkable for their long curved eyelashes and well-developed figures which are accentuated by the attractive clothing they wear. A popular garment, low-cut both front and back, has thin straps over each shoulder, crossing at the back. It reaches down to the ankles and is studded with gemstones on the bodice. Elbow-length gloves and elegant footwear, also studded with gems, are worn with this close-fitting garment. There are a variety of styles and colorful fabrics, and these change with the fashions. Men's wear on Salamia is varied. Popular is a kind of overall-type garment with a zip closure running down one side. It has long sleeves and boots to match, in a style inspired by the uniform of the pilots. As with the rest of the Confederation, married couples on Salamia need not practice any form of birth control. This is due to the fact that a woman in the Confederation conceives only two or three times during her lifetime. The average is two children to a married couple, and the Salamian physicians have perfected painless childbirth, a technique that leaves no after effects to mother or child. Weora said, "There is much that I can tell you of beautiful Salamia. But there is a saying in our language that goes, Galago sing or grander, li ala salango I, pyrol I salango si visivanda. It means, from the twin solar system of grander, to the solar system of pyrol, a more beautiful planet than Earth we have never seen." Then out of the blue came a sighting for Edwin and his wife, Elizabeth. They were awakened by a radio transmission at 1:40 a.m. the 27th of July 1968. It was Weora saying, "We have taken this opportunity and brought this ship down through your atmosphere at night, as we may not get another opportunity to come to such a low altitude again. We are approaching from the west. You should now be able to see the identification lights on the craft. We are still at a high altitude, and I would like you, Edwin, to flash a light signal, so that I can guide this craft directly above it. The personnel and myself will be on the lookout for your guidance." Edwin, having gone outside, flashed his torch skyward. He was not far from the living room and could hear the radio quite clearly. Weora responded with, "We see your identification light and will now bring the patrol craft directly above your home. We are now about 300 meters above your house. I will tilt the patrol ship 45 degrees on its side so that you can see the astral dome. The vapor you see escaping comes from the cooling vents just under the dome. These vents are part of the cooling system of the magnetic motors, which are automatically open when we enter the atmosphere of your planet. The air that is drawn in is heated, and when it escapes through the vents, the heated air condenses its water vapor into the colder air. I will now flash my identification lights on and off. We can see your house quite clearly from this position. We can also see the street lighting of the surrounding district. We must now return to altitude and will leave this position with maximum acceleration. We will depart towards the east, over the Indian Ocean, and when we reach our station altitude we will continue transmission for a few more minutes. Weora now addressed his personnel in English for the benefit of Edwin and Elizabeth. Stand by, all personnel, stand by. Now closing cooling vents. Stand by for maximum acceleration. Edwin and Elizabeth saw the craft flash instantly away and out of sight. Chapter 4, Proof and Denial. Weora hit the nail on the head when he said, "What is wrong at Q-Base? For some time I have felt that you are doubting us, our planets and our civilization. You have asked for more proof of our existence, photographs of our craft, our people and our cities. Why this change of heart? What has happened to the trust you had in us?" He was talking over the radio to a few Q group members who had come to listen at Edwin's home one Sunday morning, on the 3rd of October 1968. Many of them had demanded more proof. Behind his back, Edwin had been accused of trickery and faking the radio transmissions with a group of conspirators. They would not accept that these transmissions came from an advanced civilization. The subject matter was too simple, even boring. The terminology used by Confederation speakers was confusing. For example, dimension was used instead of universe, and this became a stumbling block. It may be that the error was on the part of the Earth human majority, who could not at the time accept dimension and preferred instead to substitute universe. With hindsight, it now appears that the extraterrestrials' own choice of words was the better. The transcripts are here quoted using the substituted word universe as written. We continue as transcribed. Then someone reported Edwin to the local police for illegally operating a radio transmitter. The police inspector came and made a thorough search of the property. He found nothing but a harmless domestic receiver which, to top it all, was an old model. Sending messages to people from outer space indeed. He treated the matter as a huge joke. Inevitably, the stigma of a hoax was to be with Edwin for a long time to come. Weora continued by saying, "I have spoken to my superiors on Calder's about this matter of your request for more evidence of our existence. At this stage we are unable to give you the proof you are asking for. As I mentioned before, it would rob your rulers on Earth of their freedom to choose to accept or reject us. So far they have not come to a definite decision, and we still hope that one day they will accept our offer of assistance as Pyrol has. But time is running out. Therefore we would like to prepare the Earth's population gradually for the acceptance of the idea of other civilizations beyond your planet. We must be careful as we do not want these transmissions to cause your families any harm. Your authorities permit radio transmissions provided we give you no material evidence or photographs. We make these radio transmissions in the simplest possible language so that even an unschooled mind cannot mistake them. I know we have a problem with the choice of words, but this will be corrected. You see, some of us have not had much practice in the English language." This was welcome light on the seemingly childish simplicity of the communications. Perhaps such simplicity was necessary to reduce the possibility of dangerous misinterpretation and misunderstanding, which still occurred nevertheless. Consider how different the police official's reaction might have been had he found an erudite treatise on space travel and been convinced that regular communication with extraterrestrials was in fact taking place at the very house at that time. Weora then told us what had happened 6 months earlier,